Hear us herein, the host of the hour, first to follow the fox named Eve, with books laid before the bear named Em, to read and retire around the long fire.
We've returned.
Yeah.
Tristram.
Tristram.
Tramtrist.
Yeah. I saw that Sir Tristram was coming up and just did not connect that it was going to be Tristan until I started reading it. I was like, oh, this is Tristan and Isolde.
I don't really know. Like, I know of it, but I don't really know how that all breaks for them. So I'm not actually up on this as a myth.
Yeah. I only really knew it in isolation. I mean, I knew it was, like, vaguely related to Arthuriana stuff, but I just had never, like, connected it. One of the main things I actually know it from is I've added to our schedule, the elf schedule. So we were talking about, at some point, watching the movie that our theme is from. Yeah. And the sequel to it is specifically like an adaptation of the Tristan and Isolde myth.
Okay.
So I decided
also, like,
that
6.5 hours long.
No, that's the third one. That's okay. Fucking long. So, but I decided after Mort d'Arthur, we'll maybe watch those two movies and then move on to the Poetic Edda.
Okay.
And then I also figured out what version of the Poetic Edda we'll probably read, and, like, broke down what poems we would read. So, people can go read that there. I don't know why this thing's being weird. Anyway, for people who want to at least know the version and don't want to go check it, it is the translation by Carolyn Larrington, which is the Oxford World's Classic version. So I was debating between this and the Liam Hollander version, and the Liam Hollander version is both a lot older. So, like, whenever there's scholarship stuff in it, it's just older scholarship. And also, he's, like, really trying to preserve the rhythms and sounds of the poems, which means that he often relies on very archaic English, in Icelandic and Old Norse, there's, the word for, to be called, that's, like, the direct cognate of height in English. And so he uses that all the time just to, like, preserve the rhythm. But, yeah, I figured this one would probably be easier to read through. So for readability, decided to go with this one. That's it for updates about the future that I have, but.
Okay. I misplaced the pen of my e-reader and I decided apparently now was exactly the time I had to find where it was. But I can't find it.
Okay.
So while you were talking, I was getting up and, like, poking around, but I hope I can find it because I don't have to buy a new one.
Yeah.
And that's how I take notes for this fucking podcast. I swear to God, this has been, like, one of my most disordered, like, brain weeks in a long time.
Yeah, you seem to be having a rough one.
Yeah, I am. Well, I should stop being rude to you and the listener, and we should just do this podcast.
Yeah.
I'll do my best, and we'll figure it out.
Okay.
So, Tristram's mother dies giving birth to him. His stepmother tries to poison him. He rescues her as, like, the boon he asks of his father. It's like, don't kill her. Then Sir Marhalt comes to demand Cornwall pay tribute to Ireland, and then he's like, because he's a Knight of the Round Table, no one's going to fight him. But Tristan's like, I'm not a knight. I'm not a Knight of the Round Table. I'll go fight him. And kills Marhalt by braining him with the sword. A piece of the sword gets lodged in his brain. Marhalt's sister, Queen of Ireland, keeps the sword piece to one day avenge her brother.
Yeah.
Because he was poisoned by a spear in that battle, Tristram goes to Ireland for healing, because it's like, you must go to where the poison's from if you want to be healed. And this is where he says that he's Sir Tramtrist, and no one thinks anything of it, because everyone's stupid in antiquity. And the queen's daughter, La Belle Isoude, Isolde of the legend, heals him. And he fights for her honor against Palamides? I don't actually know how you would say this guy's name.
I've been reading it in my head saying Palamides, but I don't know.
Yeah. I also was saying Palamides.
It sounds better to me.
Yeah. Palamides. He's discovered. The queen tries to slay him, but the king's like, no, he's like helped us, so we can't just go and kill him. That would be against our courtesy. And they allow him to leave properly with honor, but basically like never come back or we'll kill you, which is a real problem because him and Isolde have already fallen for each other and like plighted their troth and all the bullshit you do when you're in love with each other.
Yeah. So
he goes back home to Cornwall where King Mark's waiting for him. And, they fall for the same woman, same married woman I have here. I don't remember her name. I did not write it down. Do you know what her, she's not named, right? That's actually the thing.
It's the wife of Sir, Sigwarides or Sigwarides. Yeah.
Yeah. So they, the King Mark is like, oh, I need to kill him. That'll be the way to do it. And they have, they fight? Do they fight each other? I don't actually remember.
I don't know if they fight. I know that like Sir Bleoberis or whatever comes in around here too.
So Sir Bleoberis?
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 Blorbo?
Yeah, Sir Blorbo shows up and just steals her while they're arguing about this lady who's going to get her, even though she's already married to like a guy who doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Absconds her, and Tristram's asked to go get her. And he's like, well, I'm not going to do that. It would be wrong because I think Mark's won the argument. King Mark's won the argument. And it's like, it'd be wrong to go after her or whatever. So he's not going to go, and he's ordered to go. So he's like, fine, I'll go, whatever. And by dallying on rescuing her, she's fallen out of love with him and in fact is like totally offended that he would not immediately jump to her rescue. And so she's like, I choose Bleoberis. I'm going with Blorbo. Fuck you.
Yeah.
And Blorbo goes, wait a second. I don't want to get involved with all this drama, actually. I think if this is what I've walked into, I've overstepped maybe, and we should let the first thing is, he's like, I don't want to fight you. You seem like a noble knight. I might lose. So we're going to put her in the middle and let her decide like a dog.
Yeah. Like a dog in a divorce.
Yes. And that's when she goes, well, I'm going and Tristram's like, yes, I agree to that. Of course she's going to pick me. And that's when she goes, no, I'm joining him. And then he goes, Blorbo goes, no, actually, I don't want any part of this. And just takes her to her husband, who's like on his deathbed. And just like leaves her at the place where her husband is.
Yeah.
And that's when she tells everyone that Tristram fought a great battle and forced Blorbo to take her back and saves face for herself, but also gasses up Tristram in everyone's imagination.
Yeah.
Let's see. Tristram ends up fighting for the King of Ireland in Camelot for a treason charge.
King Anguishans, which is such a good name.
Yeah, which puts him back in the King's good graces. So he goes to Ireland with him, where Isolde is overjoyed to see him. But he was also told, before this, he was told to go to Ireland to get Isolde for King Mark. He's like, I want to marry Isolde, so you must go get her. And before he can do that, he ends up, his shipwrecks, and he washes ashore at Camelot and fights this whole battle or whatever. And so once he's there, he goes, oh, I need a gift for you. I need a gift from the king. I need your daughter, because King Mark wants her to be his bride. And he gets like some enchanted wine. It's only hinted that this is enchanted wine, right?
Yeah. It's like, Isolde's Dame Brangwine. And then Governail, who is like the assistant or whatever to Tristram, they like have this wine that is supposed to be drunk by Isolde and the King Mark to like make them fall in love with each other. It's like some magic wine. But then they find it and they're like, wow, can't believe our servants are keeping the good stuff to themselves, and they drink it and are doomed to forever love each other now.
Yeah, while they're doing that, they run while they're like traveling, they run afoul of a strange tradition at Castle Pleur, where people fucking this weird wife measuring contest, where a knight is like, "Oh, if your lady is hotter than my lady, I'm going to fight you for her, and if she's not, I'm just going to kill you both right now." Right?
Yeah.
I think that's the rules. Which seems like a bad exchange, and Tristram's like, "Well, my lady is clearly the hottest lady," and he's like, "You're right. In fact, I'm going to fight you right now." And then that guy like loses, right? I don't actually fucking remember what happens here.
Tristram kills him, and then
he rides down the street, and people are like, "Don't go to that castle. That castle's got this weird wife measuring thing." And he's like, "Don't worry, I've liberated you from all the wife measuring."
Yeah, there's even this tone of like he kills the like lord of the castle, and everyone in the castle is like, "I feel like we should do something, but like we've not been that chill with this wife measuring thing, so it's fine. Go ahead and leave."
Sir Palamedes captures Isoude, but Tristram rescues her. That's all I have written down for chapter 36.
Yeah. It's a pretty short chapter.
Oh, right. This is the one that's only like 4 pages. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of hurtling towards each other with spears and bashing each other with swords and things.
Sir Andret is in King Mark's court, and he hates Sir Tristram, and he's like, "Look, you're supposed to be the new wife of the king. All you do is fuck around with Sir Tristram. I'm going to find you out and get King Mark to kill you once I figure it out." So that's been happening.
Is this where Lamorak too, I think, also doesn't like?
Yeah, I want to know why Lamorak shows up. This is by chance. Sir Lamorak and Sir Driante came along the party. Yeah. So Sir Lamorak seems to be able to fight really well. And then Mark's like, they're at like a big just jousting party. Like, you know, everyone does. And Mark's like, "Tristram, go joust him." He's like, "No, he's tired. If I do that, I'm just going to beat him. And I would only want to fight a knight in his glory because I'm better than most knights." And he's like, "No, I demand you fight him now." And he's like, "Okay," he goes out and he spares him. Like he knocks him over, and then he's like, "Well, fight me hand to hand." He's like, "No, I'm not going to do that. I'll kill you." And so Lamorak takes this as a huge insult. And he storms off because he thinks that he's being pitied because Tristram thinks he's so much better than him and not because he's doing him honor by wanting to fight him fairly. We'll cover that later. Anyway, he goes to Morgan Le Fay. Apparently, he was just advertised, "If you want to fuck up a knight, come see me." And he gets a drinking horn from her that she intended to send to Camelot, where whenever a lady drinks of it, if she's been false to her man, she'll drop the horn. Or, like, spill the wine. I don't remember what she did.
Yeah, she'll, like, spill some while she's drinking.
Yeah, I just wrote down the drinking horn of cuckoldry. And I was like, that's enough for my memory. And so instead of going to Camelot, it goes to King Mark's court. And all but 4 women fail the test.
Yeah.
And it sets the whole fucking court ablaze. They're ready to slaughter all the women when someone goes, "Why are we trusting this stupid witchcraft? All it's going to make us do is kill our wives. Let's just ban the witchcraft."
Yeah.
And every wife goes, "Oh, thank God."
Yeah. But yeah, it was a great insult for Sir Tristram because it was supposed to prove that, he is fucking around with Isoude.
Yes.
Behind the king's back.
Which
he is, Tristram, to be clear,
yeah,
he is.
Yeah, so Tristram continuously is hounded for all of his dalliances with Isoude. In fact, they just like find him in bed with her one day. He gets attacked and injured. Poison arrow, whatever, and he's like, he needs healing. I don't know, this is, my notes get really bad here. He needs to go to another Isoude named Isoude Whitehands, but I don't know why he has to go to her for healing, but he has to go to her. Is she just a famous healer? Why does he have to go to her?
Do you remember? Yeah, I don't know. It's like almost repeating the thing with the poison on the spear, where he then like, you know, ventures to Ireland to be healed by an Isoude, but it just like repeats it again, but like with less clear reasoning.
Yeah. So when he goes to Isoude Whitehand, she heals him. Everyone thinks he's very impressive because he's, you know, a great knight. And then her father is like, "Oh, you need to marry her." And he basically assents because he's pressed into it. And he's having so much trouble like landing Isoude, you know, she's like the king's. And so he agrees to marry her, but the book is very clear. They do not consummate this marriage. In fact, all they do is hold hands and kiss because Isoude Whitehands does not know what sex is. Canonically, it thinks that all there is kissing and holding hands.
Yeah. It also notes. Yeah. Let me As for fleshly lust, Sir Tristram never had ado with her, as the French book attests. It also notes that the lady believed that there was no pleasure to be had beyond kissing and embracing.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's just never heard of, like, even touching yourself. She's never heard of that.
No. But everyone hears that he got married, and Lancelot is, like, fucking distraught.
Yeah.
He's immediately like, you're supposed to uphold ladies. That's the whole point. That's what knighthood's about, is upholding ladies and collecting men. How have you fucked this up so badly?
Especially when Lancelot gets distraught here, it really feels like there's the part where Tristram, like, beats the allegation so hard by, like, actually having sex with Isoud that, like, it means that the horn doesn't go to like, Guinevere. And, Lancelot. But then here Lancelot's like, I thought we had a thing where, like, we both had beards. You mean it was not real the whole time? This is the vibe I get.
No, Tristram, very straight, unfortunately, for Lancelot.
Who seems to love Tristram very much.
At this point, Tristram is considered, like, the only knight who could possibly be as good as him is Lancelot. Like, they are the highest knights in all of knightdom.
Yeah.
And then Isoud's obviously really distraught, and she writes to Queen Guinevere, but Queen Guinevere writes a note that's like, hey, don't worry about it, it's chill. In fact, I'm pretty sure that by the time all this is said and done, you two are just going to be more in love and happier, and don't worry about it. And Isoud's like, that doesn't make any fucking sense. He's married to someone named after, like, named the same name as me. I'm so unhappy about this.
I'm fully aware that I'm in legend now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then the final chapter, Sir Lamorak crashes on an island. There's, like, some guy who wants to kill Knights of the Round Table. He fights, like, this is the part where I literally don't have notes for this chapter.
Yeah.
Why does Tristram find these guys? He's just also traveling, right?
I think so. I care the least for this chapter, because it's just like, I don't really care about Lamorak like this.
Yeah, but there is the part where Sir Lamorak and Sir Lancelot meet and they kiss each other affectionately and do great joy of the other.
Yeah. Yeah, there is that part.
He truly does just meet Lancelot on the road and they fuck. That's just the thing that happens.
Yeah. Lancelot showing up like, you are still bi though, right?
Yeah. There's a bit where Isoud learns that Isoud Whitehands is traveling with Tristram, and she's like, he brought her along on his adventures? He didn't bring me along on his adventures, and is distraught, further distraught, more distraught. Yeah. Yeah, I don't remember anything else that happens here. I'm going to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
Sir Lamorak kisses another guy, Sir Belliance. He meets Sir Belliance, and he sends him to an abbey, and they heals him and never leaves his side. And then he goes to King Arthur. I'm like, this man is the gayest man of all time.
Yeah. Then they swore that they would never fight against each other.
Yeah. I remember why they were fighting, to be honest. Like I said, this has been it's kind of a rough week. Lamorak is not as interesting as Tristram.
Yeah.
This reading felt long, but I know that's just, like, my mental state right now. My apologies. I can't find I don't know where my pen is. I'm so mad about it.
People were, like, joking about this in the Discord after our last episode, too, but I was feeling it in this reading. There is, like, a little bit of a shonen energy to some of this.
Yes.
Yeah. Where it's just dudes fighting, and, like, Lancelot's the top shit, but then, you know, they're, like, figuring out what the power scale is for all the other knights underneath Lancelot. No one will be as good as Lancelot, though, you know?
Yeah.
And then truly when it's at its best, it's just, like, weird people fucking around hanging out.
Yes.
When you get to a part with a bunch of fights, I sleep. But when just random weird shit is happening, it's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm excited to know that this is just Tristan.
Yes.
Just harder to say Tristram. I don't like saying Tristram. It just feels bad in my mouth.
It doesn't really bother me, Tristram.
Tramtrist is worse, though.
Tramtrist is worse.
Yeah.
Tramtrist is some, like, British biscuit that fucking sucks.
Yeah.
It's like knockoff Tim Tams. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was so funny when he showed up and was like, my name is Tramtrist. And then just, like, knows all the details about how Sir Marholt died while they're, like, mourning Sir Marholt. Yeah. And truly nobody figures it out until, like, finally it's revealed way late. There's the part where, like, she's been holding on to that part of the sword the whole time and, like, runs out and fits it together with the sword.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't have too much else. Like, I guess there's been all this talk about Guinevere and Lancelot and, like, finally getting, like, oh, okay, here is that, like, romance plot is just happening with a different character, because I just, again, I truly don't believe it with Lancelot.
Yeah, fair enough.
I mean, this whole stuff might repeat with Lancelot, but... Oh, the other... there was a Merlin mention at the beginning, because it starts like, Tristram is young. And so Merlin briefly shows up. And I was filled with the dread that maybe this is all we'll get from Merlin, is occasionally just showing up when we, like, meet a new guy and learn about when he was young.
It's certainly possible.
Yeah. Like, what if he just never comes back?
He's just in that cave for all time?
Yeah.
Well, that'd be a bummer, but I mean, there's plenty of guys. I'm not, like, lacking on guys.
Yeah. In the meanwhile, Merlin had delivered King Melodius out of prison where he was being held. Just, like, gets mentioned briefly in the first chapter.
Yeah, but that's, like, when Tristram's being born, and he's already, like, out there doing stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that truly was, like, going back in time, so. I bet we're gonna get to a part of this book where it's gonna be, like, all the shit that Merlin said was gonna happen. It will then happen, and it will be, like, just as Merlin said. Or whatever.
Yeah.
I bet we'll get a bunch of those passages as we get into the, like, end of this book. We are starting to get to halfway. We're not quite there, but
no, yeah, we're cooking. Gotta say, this is like the very upper limit of the amount of reading I ever want to do for this podcast.
Yes. I specifically timed out for the poetic Edda when we get there for it to be like 30 pages usually. So
okay, good.
The it's number not just that of
it's 50
poems
pages that it's 50 pages of this like fucking tome that like every page is incredibly dense.
Yeah. And the when I broke up the poetic Edda as well, there's like some basic breakdowns. And so there are a few. So like the basic structure is it starts with mythological poems. Then there's the Helgi lays that are about Helgi Hundingsvana. And then there's the Nibelung cycle. So we'll go back to like Sea Arthur and all of that. And then there's like some really short sections. There's one that's the Jormunrekkr lays, and then there's also like stuff that usually gets included but isn't part of the Codex Regis, which is like the main version of the Poetic Edda that like, you know, old historic manuscripts that exist. And especially like if we do like the Helgi lays, that's like 30 pages, so I just kind of based all the rest of them roughly around that. But if we wanted to, we could like do the Nibelung cycle in two or something, but it'd be more like 50 pages. So, but yeah. I don't have too much else about sagas.
No, I have nothing.
Yeah. What are we reading next time?
We are reading chapters 40 through 46.
Okay. Looking forward to it.
Yeah.
I'm done with Nana now, so I don't have to read Nana. So I no longer have two things that I have to read for podcasts.
Oh, I have two things still.
Yeah.
I'm down one because I finished Earthsea, so which isn't even my podcast, but I was keeping up, so.
Yeah. I might start reading Earthsea when I have free time now.
You should. It's really good.
Especially because I fully caught up with, like, all of the library and other, like, physical copy of the manga I've been reading. So, I have to wait for more to come in.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, maybe I'll just try and read some Earthsea instead of immediately, you know, just jumping into, to, like, a new manga or something.
Yeah.
Because I do have multiple going right now. I was reading Blue Period today, which I had dropped for a while.
I don't even know what that is. I know people are reading it, but I don't keep up with the manga anymore.
Yeah. Basic premise is like a kid who is going to prep school to like get into an art school, like an art university. And then there's the part where there's like the actual exam to get in. And smartly, instead of having him like fail and have that be the thing that he has to overcome, it understands that the more interesting thing for him to overcome is to get in and then be like, well, wait, fuck. I'm like, there's still a lot of shit that I need to learn that I feel like I should have learned before I got here. And to have like more of the crisis of like, why was I selected? Why am I here? I have been enjoying it, but the shift to the university means that, like, some characters that I really enjoyed from early in the manga have sort of dropped out, and then there's, like, new characters that are cool, but there's, like, one character I really liked early on, and I don't know if they're gonna come back, so, I mean, I assume they'll, like, occasionally pop back in, but I don't know if they're gonna be as significant as they were in the early part, and they were my favorite character, so, I'm using they because they have a complex gender situation that definitely leaning like non-binary, maybe, or trans woman. But also, you know, more from a Japanese perspective, there's like a lot of the like female impersonator kind of stuff that comes up around it as well. And I think it's just like a different cultural thing. So,
shocking to me, this is the character you ended up identifying with. Also, while you're talking, I found my pen. So thank you for going on. So I was listening, but I was my mic muted. And I was like hanging upside down off my bed looking for this pen. But I did find it. So
yeah, that is the kind of thing that just drives you mad until you can find it. You know,
I think there is a distinct vibe to this podcast where I would do this. And if it was VoIP Life, I might do this, but I don't think I'd do it on any other podcast.
Yeah.
Not that I'm saying you brook this tomfoolery more than Jackson. I cultivate a certain level of like realness here that I'm not, I like abnormal mapping is like, I take that very seriously, probably more than it deserves, but like, that's my baby. I care more about abnormal mapping than all the other podcasts. As a work of criticism. I just like it. It's like what I always want to do is play old games and talk about them. And GGP is like the moneymaker, so I try to take it a little seriously. This just gets to be a little real.
Yeah.
You know, also it has like a smaller listenership and whatever. So if I need to go find this pen to make my brain stop itching, I'm going to find this fucking pen. And I did. So, you know, victory.
Yeah. I mean, probably long term better for this episode than you just like continuing to have your brain itch about like, where the fuck is that?
This is true. Yeah. This is true. You're not wrong.
Yeah. But this is also a nice thing where there are parts where I'm going to have to read digitally. Like, there's one or two volumes that neither Autumn nor the library has of Cross Game. And so I'll just have to read those digitally. Mm-hmm. But there is a nice thing sometimes with like getting it from the library where I just hit a point where I'm like, well, I just have to do something else and request it unless I want to read it on my tablet. So, yeah. So right now I've like, everything's returned, you know, I just got to wait for stuff to come into the library. But I feel like that's been the biggest thing I've just been like extra manga motored lately, so I know it's not the most exciting for you to listen to.
Yeah, I mean, you just, it's just gonna show up. I guess you're not on Coffee and Comic Books anymore, right?
Correct.
Yeah, so I guess it has to go here. I just never know what you're talking about.
Yeah. I did talk a little bit about Cross Game on Coffee and Comic Books.
Okay. So, is there a Stairwells this week?
There is. It's actually coming out when we're recording this in like 50 minutes, I think. I think I scheduled it to go up
my first stop tomorrow night. Then.
Yeah. Normally I've been scheduling it for 7, but I was like, on the Patreon, I might as well just schedule it the night before.
It just means I won't be able to react. Normally I give you my feedback on this episode, but I'm not going to do that because it'll be next week by then.
Yeah. I mean, you could still remember what we talked about, but.
No, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Let's be real.
I mean, you enjoyed the religion talk on the previous episode.
What I'm going to do is instead just DM you my reactions when I listen.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. And you already DM'd me your reactions to Pondering Bhutan, so.
Yes.
Yeah.
I remember what, I just thought it was funny to react to the thing you were, oh, how many friends there were. Yes, because there was a question how many friends there were, and I was convinced there were only 4 friends, on the show Friends, which I've never seen a full episode of. I think I've seen a couple clips, like, it was playing in certain places of my life. I know when I bought my car, not the car I'm driving now, but the car that I owned. And I went to get that car in the car dealership. They were playing an episode of Friends, and I watched about half of it, and I think that's the most sustained Friends I've ever seen in my life.
I've seen a couple full episodes of Friends, but not enough to like have clear memories of it. Yeah. So, yeah, people can listen on Pondering Bhutan as I try to remember how many friends there are and what their names are.
How much of that was a bit?
None of it.
Okay. Because when you were like, it's a J name, it's not Jordan or Jason. I was like, you have to be doing a bit right now.
No, this is literally just like how my brain works sometimes. Okay. Is that I will remember something and then I will like, I'll know that it's wrong, but I will also have the sensation that something about it is right. And then I'll try to zero in on like, what is the thing that is right about this that's making me not be able to get to the right answer?
Okay. I feel like you have a sort of deadpan sense of humor where I often think that you were doing bits when you were just being a person.
Yeah.
I just always think that you're trying to like do a thing and be unserious.
I mean, I guess there is a little bit of like, in some ways, I'm sometimes always doing a bit, especially in a podcast.
I just think you have like a smaller tonal shift than like when I'm being silly versus when I'm being serious. I feel like I have a harder time discerning the spectrum of that reality when I talk and listen to you.
Yeah. And Putin's the most extreme version of this because yes. Connor and I are both that. We will be deeply amusing each other and not laugh because we're just like in the bit.
Yeah. Whereas I cannot, if I'm having a good time, I'm not able to complete a sentence without laughing at the fact that I am in the middle of a bit, basically.
Yeah.
Unless I'm directly lying to Jackson's face, then I will keep it kayfabe.
And I feel like when I'm doing a bit on Stairwells, Autumn will just laugh and make it clear that I'm doing a bit more often.
Yeah. Yeah. So, that's usually my reaction to such things.
Yeah. But no, Connor and I just, we have the same sense of humor, which is the Cromartie High School sense of humor. This like, you know, dry delivery in terms of like how a lot of it's presented, even as like stuff is completely outlandish, there's still like a certain seriousness to it. And then also just a lot of the humor being like extended weird situations that you're in. So, truly Pondering Bhutan, we're always doing the comedy of Cromartie High School, even when we're not talking about the chapter at all. But like I know Crystal says when she started reading along with Pondering Bhutan was like, this does just make more sense. I just now understand when stuff is a bit and not.
Yeah, I'm just not gonna do that.
Yeah. It's not a lot of pages, but also fair. It's like 8 pages right now per episode.
I know, but I haven't read manga in months.
Yeah. That's fine. It's just my favorite comedy manga of all time.
The last manga I read was when we read Delicious Dungeon for The Last Beach House.
Yeah.
And that was it. Doors closed.
Yeah. I mean, my other big thing I've been up to is VTubers, but I don't know if you want to talk about anything before I get into VTubers.
So Narissa released a new song.
Yeah.
And it's good, but it's like a good chorus and like one verse, but the song goes on like three verses, but just fucking repeats the chorus, the verses.
Yeah.
I was like, you didn't finish writing the song. Did you run out of time?
I don't think so, because it took like months for that to release.
It's like a 45 second anime OP, but then there's like the studio version, but instead of having a sick like guitar solo like Stand for the Victory, it just fucking repeats the thing again.
Yeah. Just to fill like 2.5 minutes or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. When I think of anime OPs that have incredible studio, like the album versions, Stand to the Victory always comes in because it has a fucking great like guitar solo breakdown and wraps back around. It's like you go on a fucking journey listening to Stand to the Victory.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Narissa, you need like a shift of like a bridge. Something sounds a little different. Like what happened?
Yeah. It was also funny listening to the podcast that she put out where they just kept, like, underneath was just, like, looping, like, the basic track, and it just truly made it feel like you're just stuck in the song.
The part of that that's really funny is it had all of the, like, you know, like, I don't know how much, you probably watched a lot of DVD features in your life. You get the ones that were clearly meant to be promotional material before the movie came out, and they just slapped them on the disc, and it's always like, here's like the one money shot that was in the trailer, but it's going to open all these clips. And then there's going to be a little bit of a clip, and there's going to be the theme song that's cut to another little B-roll of movie footage every single time. And they're all like 4 minutes long. And you're like, the minute you watch the second one, you're like, I can never watch these again because they just make my brain melt. And that's kind of what it felt like. It was just like clear, like shallow promotional tat. And that's fine. But like, I would like something a little deeper than this. I know that you're more thoughtful about this.
Yeah.
In fact, she has a YouTube short about the fucking song she did the English version of, the Love Me, Love Me, Love Me, that is more detailed than that entire podcast.
Yeah.
Because it's about the way in which she changed the way the line like scans because it just didn't flow in English and most people just went with a more literal translation. She's like, I want to adapt a little differently, and that's why I went this thing. And it was like really thoughtful and good. And I was like, more of that, Narissa, and less of this podcast, Narissa, please.
Yeah.
There's something about this is going to sound so much meaner than I mean it to be. I promise. I'm saying this like
you just love bullying my Kamiyoshi.
No. I like her.
I know.
I think that somewhere in her like perfectionism, like, cause she always like, I'm just a perfectionist forever. The things that she ends up making just feel really shallow because she can't ever like commit to like being real with them.
Yeah.
Like they just end up being too slick. Like maybe she just like doesn't have the like wherewithal. She's not working herself into the dirt, you know, like say what you will about Calliope Mori as a person. I fully believe she leaves it all on the table when she fucking writes a song. Because they're earnest and they're cringe and, you know, they're messy. And some songs are clearly bad, like the fucking Metal Gear Solid one with the, like even she makes fun of that one. She did not write the lyrics of that one. But I just don't feel that from Narissa. I'm like, you're not real when you're writing your music. Like, it's very slick, but it's hollow. And I think you could be better than this.
Yeah. And I think like the vibe I get from it, too, is like she's deeply anxious about like, I think putting too much out there and then people not liking her.
Yes.
And I just hope that like, as she sticks with this, she will become more comfortable doing that.
Yes.
And be like, no, I do just like legitimately have fans where I can just, you know, like the streams are often good because it's just at a certain point, you just keep talking on a stream, like a day after day. And you just kind of have to like drop a little bit of the like, oh, fear of if I say this and I'm like too cringe or whatever. And then people still stick around, you know?
Yes.
So I hope that that, you know, that carries over. I know that, like, this week she's not doing streams because she's doing a shit ton of recording. I don't know what mm-hmm. that's for. She hasn't said, but she has said that it's like she's just recording all week. So
could be a game, could be could be an EP or something. Like, it could be anything.
Yeah. I mean, she's done voices for anime before too, so it could be that.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, I think next time we record, I will have gotten the birthday celebration merch.
Oh, nice.
Kit thing.
Cool.
So it's supposed to come on Friday.
I don't think I have any VTuber merch that's planned, that's slated to come for another couple of months. I bought a few things recently, but they're, you know, it takes forever.
Yeah. Yeah, this one's been so long, but I truly just didn't know when it was going to ship. And I saw somebody on Twitter had gotten one of the, they did like the emblem, like little trays, like dice tray yes. things. Mm-hmm. And I had ordered the Naresso one because it was just like, oh, like, you know, I play tabletop role playing games sometimes with Nora and Autumn and Grace. That would be nice to have just like a tray to roll in. And so when I got the shipping notification, I thought it was that. And I was like, oh, it's the birthday stuff.
Nice. Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah. I feel like that's the biggest stuff I've been doing. I mean, I took today off of work. We're recording this on May 1st. So I took it off for Beltane, but
I really want a day off, but right now things are such where it would be rude to my coworkers if I took a day off right now. Not yeah. going to do that to people. But I really want a day off. I've got like a week and a half of things being on fire to go. There's an yeah. end date. Someone went on vacation. I don't like talking about my day job. I'm just saying for the next week and a half, I'm just like full brain suit for a little bit.
Yeah. My 2.5 weeks of work really sucking is also now over. So I'm like in that I'm free yeah. space now. So, but I do just like there's a part where I was just reading manga on my patio having breakfast. We have had a like closet moth situation that we've been dealing with. It's involved a lot of like going through all of our clothing and stuff, washing it, bagging it so that like moth, you know, the moths can't get to it. So I did work on that some today. The other thing is I watched the first episode of Gundam Unicorn. So
yeah,
that was good.
The Gundam. Beast of possibility.
The Beast of possibility. It was great seeing your shirt design before watching the episode.
Oh yeah. I'm yeah. glad you knew. I guess you would notice me because I workshopped that on all Twitter before I posted it.
Yeah.
Because I never know if people know which bits on Go Axis or Jackson and which ones are me, but that one was definitely me. That's a me joke, I think, ultimately.
Yeah.
Remember yeah. when we used to use our fucking Gundam channel or Twitter to make a bunch of Gundam jokes? Been a long time.
Yeah. I'm excited though. Like it was good, and there's only like 7 episodes, so
I feel like such an asshole. I had a very principled statement at the end of 00, being like, I don't really care about UC. I firmly believe the Gundam should stop, and I think UC should definitely stop. There's nothing left to say. And then I just fucking hit the people talking about space noids and new types and there's a Gundam and I'm like, motherfucking Universal Century, let's go.
Yeah.
I truly feel like I'm giving into astonishment on that one. But I don't care. You know, it's nice to just be excited for a thing. It looks nice. I think the action's cool. I like the big fucking bombastic Sawano score. I was really excited. I'm excited to watch more. Yeah. And yeah, it's only 7 episodes. Like, 7 episodes can't hurt me.
Yeah, that's the real thing. I feel like I'd be far more apprehensive if this was going to be, you know, we're watching this for like half a year, you know?
Yes, yes.
But like 7 episodes, like, that's going to be done before I go to Iceland.
Kuroza Rona is 18 years old during 0096. He could be on Londo Bell. He could be one of the cops. Because in my imaginary of what Carozza Rona was doing before Cosmo Babylonia, before he put on the mask. Obviously, he's like a rich guy. He's one of the nobility. And I think he'd probably be working for the cops. I think he'd be working for the super cops.
Yeah.
Yep. Rookie cop Leon S. Kennedy, but it's Carozza Rona before he puts on the mask, is too fucking funny to me. I need this to be real.
Yeah. Well, I have my theory about a connection in the other way, but.
Yeah. I don't want to talk about it.
I don't have to say it on the podcast.
Yeah. I don't see it, but it's fine.
If I prove to be right, I will come on here and gloat.
Okay. That's fine. You're allowed. I would. So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Cause I just saw that character and immediately felt in my gut.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Also the amount of like budget in this is great too.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, if something's just like well animated, I mean, this fully is just giving into astonishment, but it does help, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Part of Seed being so excruciating is that it was also just very like the aesthetics were bad.
It's like, one of the worst looking anime I've ever seen.
Yeah. It looks terrible.
It's not just the digipaint. There's plenty of digipaint. I was talking to Jackson about this literally like the other day. I'm like, there's plenty of digipaint shows I think look incredible. Like from that year, from around that era, from before that era. And not even like ones that are like clearly like showing off like Standalone Complex, which I think is like a really nice looking show. Just like ones that are like modest, that just look fine. C is uniquely terrible.
Yeah. I still don't know what's going on with like the design of the like faces and stuff in Seed and why they decided to make it worse for the movie.
They made it even worse for the movie. Yes.
I guess the Kamarni High School anime was probably airing alongside Seed.
Okay.
That's also a very like digipaint show, very low budget, but like using its low budget well.
Yeah.
Because it's comedy, like it just knows that it can be really funny by just like weirdly stretching still image or whatever rather than like doing animation. Yeah. It looks better than Seed.
Yeah.
It has actual composition sometimes.
I'm just looking at screenshot. I just Google image search Kamarni High School anime. And man, this show looks weird. This man's shoving like 50 pencils in his mouth.
That's like one of the first things that happens in the show.
There's just a burly shirtless man in suspenders. He looks great. I love this Freddy. Guy. Okay. Well, I like Freddy.
Yeah. Freddy's fantastic.
There's the robot. I knew about the robot.
Yeah, Mechazawa.
Yeah.
Did you see the gorilla yet?
Yeah, I've seen the gorilla.
Yeah. Purple Mohawk. They really enjoy animating the Purple Mohawk just, like, wafting around.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Scroll down far enough and you'll see the Yamaguchi with the afro.
Yeah.
Yeah. I highly recommend people watch the Kamarni High School anime. It's very good. Also, the He Ate My Pencil bit is fantastic. One of the best intros to an anime. This really tells you what the show is going to be about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What have you been up to?
Not much.
Just brain melting?
Yeah, Was I even gaming? I was gaming, but nothing that was worth talking about. I bought Rhapsody 2. I got my Crunchyroll class action settlement, all $31 of it, on a prepaid MasterCard. And I was like, well, I don't know what I could spend this on other than there's a Steam sale going on. And Rhapsody 2 was on sale, it was only like 20%, but I was like, that's better than it's ever going to be, probably. So I bought it. Haven't played it. I actually started playing a different RPG instead, but I did do that. That's one of the things I did.
Yeah.
So when I play Rhapsody 2, I will tell you if it's good or not. I bet it's good.
Yeah. I keep seeing them in the Steam sale and thinking about it, but I have other games that I want to play. So like right now, I'm like, I don't have to spend money on that. It'll be on sale again. You know?
Yeah. No, that was, I wouldn't have spent the money except it was free money. So I might as well spend it before I literally forget I have the card.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, but then I started playing East 9 instead. I don't know why. People were talking about East in the Discord, I think is what happened. And I gotta play 9, and then I've got to play original 3 and original 4s. Then I've played every East game.
Okay.
And then Nordics comes out at the end of the year, which is East 10. And I'll probably wait for that to go on sale in some capacity.
Yeah. I've played East 1 through 3.
Okay. Did you play Oath of Agana when you played 3, or did you play Original 3?
No, I just played Original 3.
Oh, okay. That's one of the ones I haven't played.
Yeah.
Is that a bump combat game still, Original 3? I think it is, right?
I think so.
Okay, I don't know.
This is forever ago. I think 3 is the one that has not a really banging game soundtrack, but...
Okay.
Yeah, let me look at this. I'm just like looking at a list of the songs.
Because Oath of Volgana is one of my favorite RPGs of all time. I think it's just sick as hell. But it's kind of a different thing. It's a pretty wildly different version of that game. Oh, this is like a side scroller. Originally East 3.
Yeah.
Okay, then probably not bump combat.
Yeah, I don't entirely remember.
I was saving those till after East 9, because once that's done, I kind of want like a nice old game palette cleanser, and then I'll jump into East 10, like I said, when it's on sale. East 9 runs really fucking badly on the PS5, and I don't understand why, because it looks worse than East 8 did. And it's kind of a bummer. So I'm hoping that game is good, because I'm only 90 minutes in. So I don't really know if it's good or not yet. But East 8 was immediately appealing, and East 9 is not immediately doing it for me, despite being very similar games.
Yeah.
But partially that's just it runs like shit. And if you're going to be a crappy anime game, the least you can do is run at a solid frame rate. It doesn't have to be 60. I don't care. But it needs to be solid. It needs to be steady. And not hitch when I'm running around your town.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember exactly how East 3 combat works.
I mean, it looks like Zelda 2 from these images, which, I mean, shit, I need to play it then, because Zelda 2 is one of my favorite games.
I feel like there's still a way in which it felt like kind of like bump combat, but there was like swinging the sword.
Okay. Do you know which version you played? It looks like I would be probably playing this on the Turbo Graphics.
Yeah, I think it was Turbo Graphics.
Okay. Because it looks like there's Super Nintendo, Famicom. Oh, that's Japan only, and Genesis. But I can't imagine if you could play that on PC Engine CD. Why wouldn't you? Because it'd be way better. Because it's going to have the really fucking good music that way.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure, because this was like early days of me, emulating stuff where I played all of them. So if I didn't play the TurboGrafx, it was probably the NES version. And then I probably just listened to the TurboGrafx soundtrack.
Okay.
Because they do have a bunch of the, like, TurboGrafx-East music. So, but yeah, I think like East 1 and 2, like the TurboGrafx version of that is the one that I played. So, because I'm fairly certain I played the one where they're like both together in one thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But other than that, yeah, I haven't been doing anything. I feel like I haven't watched a movie since last time we recorded. I've been sleeping really badly, so that's not helped. I was like, did I have a bunch of pot? What did I do last week? How did nothing get accomplished? I don't have an answer for you.
Yeah. I don't know.
Sometimes you're just not your best self.
Yeah.
Sorry, I keep yawning. I'm like I said, I'm tired.
I've truly just been chilling. I feel slightly bad being like just very manga moded right now because.
I mean, you got your personal freedom. You don't have to do everything to entertain me. You should, but you don't have to.
Yeah.
I don't expect it because no one else is doing it. So it'd be rude to hold you to a standard that everyone else is failing.
Yeah, I guess the other thing is like, because Autumn's been getting into post-punk music lately. Uh-huh. So I've also just been listening to a lot of post-punk. Because that's my wheelhouse. So, I think a little bit of it comes up. This is like even like when we recorded Stairwells, it was like slightly before they like fully tripped and fell down the post-punk hole. So, mm-hmm. I assume the next one we'll talk about it even more.
Okay.
Unless they just immediately fall out of this hyperfixation, which could happen. You know, Lord knows I swing around too between various hyperfixations. So,
I don't think that's true.
I do a little.
I feel like you're pretty steady, and maybe it's just because of all the people I know. I think Autumn is the most like this.
Yeah,
you do not hang at their level.
That's true. I think also some of it is just skewed by, I have this one major ongoing hyperfixation of Nana, that just makes everything else feel grounded around it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you like movies, you like manga, you like your VTuber, you're really into Nana always. Hopefully that'll die down a little bit now that you're not podcasting about it 4 hours a week.
Every other week,
it'll never
please.
Fully go away.
Yeah, it won't. But also I won't be actively thinking about like chapters I just read, you know?
Yes.
Especially once we record, cause I've read through everything, but we still haven't recorded the final discussion episode. And once that happens, I can just like I hold on to the thing that I've read until I record about it. And then I just put it down. So like mentally in my head. So,
yes, absolutely.
I still have like, I'm still holding on to end of Nana stuff in my head all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Which I guess is kind of true normally, but is extra true right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to think if I've done anything else, but, I mean, some of this, like, just trying to clean out the closet stuff has also been, not a major time sink. Emily's done more of it than I have, but, you know, it was still like a lot of today. I was just going through all of my clothing, checking to see if moths had gotten to it, deciding on the stuff I wanted to keep and what we could like donate or throw away or whatever. So, which was the thing that we'd kind of needed to do anyway. And then the moth situation intensified it. So, still preferable to when we had bed bugs. I would not wish bed bugs on my enemies. It's a fucking awful.
So. Yeah, no, I had bed bugs, 15 years ago. Truly some of the worst shit that could happen to a person.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, like, deeply unsettling to, like, as well, in addition to just all the shit you have to do to try and get rid of them. But yeah, it's also just like deeply like, because there's also just this period where you're trying to deal with it, but you still have to go sleep in that bed, and you just know like there's bed bugs in there, and you're like, well, fuck.
There were definitely nights where I just fucking went and slept in my car, like in the parking lot of my apartment complex when I had those.
Yeah.
That's where I was at. I was like, I'd rather do this than have to deal with this.
And once we had it all like taken care of, we got rid of our mattress, obviously. But we didn't have the money to buy a new mattress. So now we're just like stuck with a Casper for a while. And Casper is not that great of a mattress. But it just like, you know, we didn't want to get rid of that one yet. I mean, it was getting old, but like we wanted to like hold out until we could get another nice mattress. Casper is not that great of a mattress, Sim. But I guess it helped when we just needed to buy a decently cheap mattress to be able to sleep on after getting rid of our mattress. So, and now anytime I go stay at any hotel or anything, I obsessively check the bed.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't.
Just the rest of my life. I'd
be freaked out about this too.
Yeah. See, I think we got it probably like in New York when we were flying back from Ireland, I think.
Oh.
If
that happened now, I'd be like, I'd just burn everything. I burn everything I own. I don't care. I don't want to go through this again in my life.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I feel like I don't have too much else to do. Or talk about.
No, let's get the fuck out of here. Once I do this, I can go lay down. So you're my last stop tonight.
Okay. I also realized I have more room. Like, I have more, like, wall space in this recording closet now. Since we've been cleaning it out. I should hang up those little Nana prints that you got me on. Like, 2 years ago or something. They've been in my desk, so I've been like, I want to do something with them, but I don't know where to put them. So.
That's true.
Yeah. So then I can also look at those Nada prints in addition to Utena, and a Bjork poster when I record. So, that's all I have. Where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at @EM_Bing. You can find all my podcasts at abnormalmapping.com. What's been out recently? Did anything come out last week? What happened last week? Abnormal Mapping was last week, right?
I think so.
I mean, I guess it would have been 2 weeks ago now, so...
Yeah.
Fuck if I know. Check out Abnormal Mapping anyway. It's good. Listen to Dragon Readers on Export Audio. We haven't finished Brissinger. Actually, when this goes up, we will finish Brissinger. That episode might not be out yet. I've already read all of Brissinger. It ends in goofy ways, and we'll talk about it. I totally misread where a couple of the twists were happening, but I was right that there were big twists happening, and I think some of them are kind of dumb, but not in a way that I'm mad about, just dumb. And watching me and Dia play My Summer Vacation 2, we took this past week off, which will be a week ago now that you're listening to this, because Dia was under the weather. Hopefully we can record again and have a good time. Obon Festival's happening.
Yeah.
I think that's everything.
All right. Well, you can find me at @FoxOmnia on Twitter and also anything else that I'm on. Go listen to Ghost Divers, where we are going to be finishing up our discussion of Nana. When this comes out, I think it'll be like the week that the like volume 20 discussion is coming out, but looking forward to people writing in emails for the question bucket and stuff for that. We've already gotten a few, but I hope we get some more by the time we get there. So also listen to Ornate Stairwells, the episode that's coming out the week that we're recording, so it'll be out when people hear this, is on Born in Flames. And then next we're doing Happiness of the Katakuris. So just,
this is like a movies I tell you to watch double feature.
I've already watched that one, but yeah,
I'm being so catered to.
Yeah. I'm going to have, Autumn watch it and yeah, we'll cater to you.
I told you to watch, I'm sure this is in that stairwells, but it isn't up yet. I told you to watch Born in Flames just because I thought it was a movie that you in particular would like. And I was like, watch it with Autumn. Autumn would probably like it too. And it happens like Katakuri's. Did I tell you? That's just been one of my favorite movies since I was 18 when I watched it randomly. Because there was in Lincoln, where I went to college briefly, there was this really cool like independent DVD video store that I don't think it was there. I think it closed very shortly after I was in college. But they had back in the day, they had a bunch of like Japanese movies. Like it was the era where like stuff was really hard to find. So like they had Ichi the Killer and I was like, oh, I've heard about Ichi the Killer. And you need to like put down like a $50 deposit because they were afraid people wouldn't bring back this out of print copy of Ichi the Killer. So we did that. We rented Ichi the Killer. And that's when I saw Suicide Circle and like all of that shit. And I watched Happens. So Katakuri's is part of that. And I think it kicks shit all those movies. I know you're a big fan of Suicide Circle. And that's fine, but it's still Happens. Katakuri's is like the most, if you aimed a beam directly at my heart, it would be Happiness of Katakuri's. It's just like silly and genre hopping and earnest in a way that I like cinema to be. And I've loved it. I did not tell you to watch it for stairwells, but I'm glad you are.
Yeah. We have some, like, we have ones on the horizon, but we're also not going to hold ourselves to like this order or even not doing a different one, you know. Because truly, stairwells, if we're like trying to just stick to a schedule, I think it suffers because
every
if we're
time
not excited,
you say, oh, we're going to do this next, it never happens.
Yeah. So here's a list of stuff where I'm sure some of this will not do. But after Happiness of the Katakuris, we're probably going to do Inland Empire, just finish out David Lynch. It's like the one David Lynch thing we still haven't watched.
I haven't seen it.
And then also in the wings is Eyes Without a Face. In the realm of the senses, Persona, and great. Salesman.
That's good. And Salesman's good. Yeah, those are all real good movies.
Yeah. So
I feel like it's a little repertory screenings core. You're just picking big classics.
We can do that.
Yeah, no, you can. I'm happy. I'm not saying it's a complaint.
I mean, I feel like we're also picking big classics when we do the Blue Angel, but people don't agree. But it's just
there will be the Basic Instinct one when I'm done with Dragon Readers. That's coming.
Yeah. There is some other one too. Oh, the Psycho remake.
Psycho remake. Yeah.
Yeah.
Some stupid thing I told Autumn we were going to do that I'm going to do because I'm never going to watch it otherwise.
Wait, have you not watched it yet?
No, I've never seen it.
Oh, okay.
That's why I wanted to do it.
Yeah.
Also, I famously hate Psycho. So, like, it's extra weird that I'm like, let's do this.
Yeah. I'm not super fond of Psycho, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hitchcock, one of those where there's still some decent movies, but I feel like a lot of people like Hitchcock more than I do. You know?
Yeah, the distinction I would give, but it isn't consistent enough to be true, is I like when Hitchcock's funny and I don't like when he's not.
Yeah.
But what that is like, it really can come down to the audience more than the actual film itself. Or like how I see it or how it's framed. But, I think when he's funny, his movies are really fucking funny. And I think, like, when he's a master of horror, I'm like, snore. Like, get out of here. Go home.
Yeah.
But those are basically the same skill. I also believe those are the same skill set. So it's really weird in which I like one and not the other from him.
Yeah.
Because fundamentally, a good horror movie and a good comedy are doing the same stuff mechanically. I really firmly believe that.
Yeah.
And
playing with expectations, but, surprise. Yeah, it's
like, and set up like you have your setups to your punchlines or your scares. The build is honestly always more important than the payoff.
Audition is a comedy.
I haven't seen Audition since that time in college where I was renting from the store.
Yeah.
So that's one I'd like to revisit because I don't remember having much of an opinion about Audition. It was one of those everyone's like, this is the most fucked up thing you'll ever see. And I remember watching and going, it's not that fucked up.
Yeah.
I went through a period where I was watching all of the like fucked up movies. Like everyone's like, this is the most extreme movie in the world. Don't do that. One, it's, I think this is a thing that like in antiquity, people, it was hard when it was hard to get a hold of movies. It was like a special treat. By the aughts, it was like a thing where you could find the list, you could find the movies usually. And so it was less, it was fine. And now there's like no reason to do this to yourself. I mean, partially it's just growing up on a certain type of film, not Twitter. I almost said film Twitter. Twitter doesn't exist. But reading, you know, fucking Ain't It Cool News and other websites that ilk in the early aughts. And you just go far enough where you're like, I've just seen too many nasty movies that are truly stupid. Not shocking, just fucking stupid. And I don't want to do that anymore in my life.
Yeah. My impression of a lot of, I mean, Mikkei often goes to this like shocking level. But I also just think compared, like there's this like aura around him of being like, oh, so like fucked up or whatever. But I feel like he's always like kind of having a laugh about like this kind of gore and like extreme stuff in movies.
Yes.
He's like having fun with it as like, this is just ridiculous that this is like a thing that we do.
He's a more talented Peter Jackson type.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't think they're that different. If Peter Jackson made 30 movies instead of like six, they would be more like Mikkei, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Looking forward to Happiness of the Category. It's just truly a delightful movie. So.
Yeah.
And I guess also go listen to Pondering Bhutan with Ajishiro Taro and Hachimitsu Boy.
What's the most fucked up movie you've ever seen? Audience, write in. I guess you can answer too.
Yeah, I was going to. I thought you were asking me at first, but the audience can also write in. Probably like the guinea pig stuff.
I have not seen that.
With like mermaid in a manhole. Okay. Oh, there's also it's. The like English one is like a title of it is really bad. Like it's just like a very generic Japanese movie, The Bedroom. I'm trying to remember what the actual it like translates to something very different. What is the actual? Whatever. Well, it's the 1992 Japanese movie, The Bedroom. Hisayasu Sato is the director. And I don't think it's like there's a lot of the just like, this is a fucked up movie because there's just like something extreme happening on camera or whatever. This is just like one of those like, you know, bizarre erotic movies. But the reason why it's fucked up is, I'm trying to remember the name of the guy who's in it, who's like convicted of of like cannibalism and stuff.
That guy's in it. I know exactly who you're talking about.
Yeah. Is it, what is his name?
Issei Sagawa.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, there's only one infamous, Japanese cannibal who got away with it.
Yeah. And he's like specifically in it, like after all of that stuff as like part of, and that's the part that's just more fucked up about it is that he's just like, in it. And, a lot of the subject of the movie is like, borderline rape stuff. Like movie is like rape. And then just like watching it on the movie is like, this is weird and intense. And it's just like fully playing with his like whole image and the obsession around him in a way that's like, you know, I think it's just in terms of like how much it's trying to push it. It's been a while since I've watched it. I don't know if it's like actually doing anything interesting with it.
That's fair.
But I remember watching it being like, this is actually like a little bit just upsetting because of like all of the stuff around it, you know?
Yeah, no, that's fair. I mean, when I went through my period of this, I watched a lot of like the fucking Faces of Death bullshit. And that is truly like, just don't do that to yourself. It's bad for you.
Oh yeah, mentally. Here's the translation of the Japanese title of The Bedroom. Promiscuous wife, disgraceful torture.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to watch real murderers or like people getting killed. Like, you know, I saw enough of that on the early internet. I feel like on some level that stuff's been just like sanitized out of most people's experience of the modern internet, unless you're reading Twitter trends on every once in a while when that stuff goes around. But it's just bad. It's bad for your psyche. I truly believe that. I mean, the science backs me up, I guess. But the movie that like shook me out of this, like grabbed me by the shoulders and shook me like, stop watching bullshit like this because someone said it was edgy online, was 2010's A Serbian Film, which is truly the dumbest thing I've ever watched. And it's just tasteless and crass. Yeah. And awful. And people just talked it up, you know, like this is the era with like fucking Human Centipede and shit like that, which I don't care. I watched that and it was fine. It didn't like bother me. I don't think it's like great or anything. I have no thoughts about Human Centipede. But that movie was just juvenile in the way it was edgy, in a way that I'm like, I need to stop doing this to myself. I was also getting older, I guess, you know, you hit 25 and go, I just can't watch this bullshit anymore.
Yeah.
I basically stopped. I mean, I've seen some of the extreme films since then, right? Like I watched Martyrs. I actually really liked Martyrs, but I understand why people don't recommend it. Inside, all that French New Extremity stuff, I actually kind of vibe with, but you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah. I'm just looking at the page for Isayasu Sato.
Yes.
And just like the titles of his movies. Just a long list of horrible titles. I mean, there's the part that has like his title for it or whatever. And a lot of his title is less weird and extreme than the like actual title given to it. Like, I guess, for Promiscuous Wife, Disgraceful Torture, his title is An Aria on Gazes.
Okay.
So.
That's so fucking pretentious. I don't hate it.
apparently he did a movie called, In the Thicket / New Rashomon.
Man. New Rashomon is such a great title for a movie.
Yeah.
In New Rashomon, everyone agrees on the story. That's like the gimmick, right? It has to be like everyone tells the exact same story. And you got to figure out what the fuck that's supposed to mean. That's what I would do if I was making a movie called New Rashomon.
Yeah. And then like the guy at the end with the like rain is like talking about how horrifying it is that there'd be a movie called Rashomon, but everyone would agree on the story.
Yeah. I do think there's something like frightening and oppressive about the idea of what if like four strangers told the exact same story to you. Like I'd be like, well, that's something's wrong with the universe then.
Yeah.
Cause you can't get four strangers to agree on fucking anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't like it. If you're interested in fucked up movie recommendations, the one that I actually do recommend to people, I recommended this to my therapist. I don't think she's watched it. Destiny said it was, I didn't think it was that bad. It was just hard to find for a long time. So I was like, Destiny, we got to watch this because we like watching horror movies in October. And she keeps bringing it up as like, this is the one that really fucked me up. I can't believe you made me watch this. It's good, but I hate it. And I don't think anyone should see it. Was the Poughkeepsie Tapes, which is like a 2007 fake documentary. Like found footage horror movie that I think is just fucking good. That one she said fucked her up. It's now like there was a Blu-ray that Scream Factory put out and whatever, so it's findable. It used to be really hard to get a hold of. And I just really liked it. I thought it was creepy and good.
Yeah.
So that's what I recommend if you're looking for something a little spooky and fucked up. You know what movie is like really depressing? Like it's like normal. It's like a horror movie, but it's like normal evil where it's like the mundanity is the thing that really fucks me up. And people always cite The Strangers with that or something, but I never cared. Green Room. I thought Green Room was like really fucked up and like scary to me.
Yeah. I don't know if I've seen that one.
It's about this band who ends up like playing in this place where it's just a bunch of like neo-Nazis, and Patrick Stewart's like the leader of the neo-Nazis, and they just get in a huge fight with them, and the neo-Nazis like basically barricade the venue they're playing at and decide they're gonna like kill him, and they have to fight their way out of it. It's just the violence is like really like low-fi but realistic, and it's just fucking scary.
Yeah.
I highly recommend it. It's pretty good. I remember Patrick Stewart being very good in it. Which I don't actually think much about modern Patrick Stewart. I think he's bad at most things. Anyway, we've gone on really long. This was supposed to be our outro. Sorry for just talking about fucked up movies.
Yeah.
This is like a weird, but it used to be a pet interest of mine. So I just have a lot of things bouncing around in my head.
I was just going to say the thing that's like one of the scariest things in a horror movie that I've seen to me, is the shots in Pulse where Tokyo is just fucking empty.
Okay. The thing in Pulse for me is the fucking ghost. The ghost in Pulse freaks me out every time. I think it's like so expertly shot.
Yeah. I think the ghosts are also really good in Pulse, but like when I get to the part of just like, Tokyo is fucking empty. That like just people are like everyone's gone just like gets at core fear that I have within myself. Where it's genuinely like I think about it as just like one of the scariest, because anytime you see Tokyo, it doesn't matter what time of day it is, there are people moving around. Like even at night it might be like a little bit quieter, but you just see like, and it's just like the middle of the day and Tokyo's fucking empty. And that's just a terrifying image to me. Just like this thing that I'm used to being so full of people is empty.
It's really funny too, because I think the empty Tokyo in Pulse is like really unsettling, but I think the empty London in like 20 Days Later is like really peaceful.
Yeah.
One might argue that that's the difference between a good movie and a bad movie, but I do like 28 Days Later. I'm not going to say it's a bad movie. I just know people would make that argument right now.
Yeah.
Hey, Ornate Serials went up. I got the email in my inbox.
Nice. Now. Well, should I let you go so you can listen to it?
No, I'm going to listen to it at work tomorrow. Yeah. Shut the fuck up.
Well,
but we should go because we're just going to keep talking about movies.
But movies are good.
Movies are good.
This we found a thing to talk about.
Yeah.
At the end of the podcast.
Yeah.
I'll let you go.
Yeah, write in on your most fucked up movie.
Yeah.
Like, edgy fucked up, I guess, is fine, but, like, I'd rather have the ones where you're like, man, that one just kind of lingered in my brain too much, did bad things to me. The first time I saw The Seventh Seal, that did that to me really bad. Like, really bad. I was in, like, a state about, dying someday, and that movie really hit in a way that I didn't even like to think about for, like, years. I'm mostly at peace with not being okay about this sort of stuff these days. I'm not saying I'm okay with it. Not saying that.
Yeah.
But I am at peace with the amount of not okay I am, and I used to be very avoidant about it.
I laughed when you mentioned it just because that's such a you response in the way that, like, empty Tokyo is a me fear response.
Yeah.
I'm at peace with dying. I'm honestly surprised sometimes that I'm still here. The idea of no people, though, deeply frightening to me.
Oh, I just want to be in the bubble tree in the fountain where it's just you, like, fucking meditating in space for 500 years, no one around. That sounds so good.
Oh, my God, it's terrifying to me. Genuinely, I used to be, like, a deeply fearful person when I lived in, like, more rural suburban Michigan. Uh-huh. Now I live in a city where even if I'm, like, home alone in my apartment, there's just, like, neighbors creaking around upstairs. There's people walking around the street. I just feel, like, I genuinely feel safer and, like, less fearful in a fucking bustling city, which I know is the reverse of a lot of people who are afraid of the city for often racist reasons, but,
If I was in the woods, if I was alone in the woods, I would be afraid because it's the fucking woods. The woods are scary.
Yeah. And just like, I mean, the part of Michigan, like the house that I lived in was not like fully truly rural, but it was kind of on the outskirts of the suburban. Okay. And so there was just like there was just a big forest behind my house. Right. And I could walk through it to get to church. But like,
I like being alone, but I don't like being that. That's a different thing. Like, the thing you're describing is, like, an alienation and, like, in a thing that is scary to me. Like, what if there's a guy who comes out of the woods? What if a bear comes out of the woods? Like, who fucking knows? Yeah. I've seen a Blair Witch Project. All sorts of shit is in the woods.
The amount of times that, like, I'd be left home alone and I would, like, obsessively check all of the doors to, like, make sure that they were locked, that, like, windows were drawn. I am not like this in the city. I mean, I lock my doors when I, like, come in or something, but I don't yeah. like, go to bed with, like, fear in my heart that the doors aren't locked.
I understand this, even though we feel differently about being alone versus being yeah. around people. I do think this is a normal, to me, this feels very normal.
Yeah.
The city does not scare me. It's, but, like, being in the same room with someone, that's the part I don't like.
I mean, like, I enjoy being in the same room with someone and just doing my own thing and then sometimes hanging out and doing stuff.
Yeah.
I also am just, like, deeply at peace with the knowledge that, like, somebody is, like, within 50 feet of me, right? Just knowing that there's somebody, like, if I, like, yelled loud enough, somebody would hear. Just makes me feel, like, deeply safe and secure.
I don't think I consider this at all in my life as a thing to feel any way about.
Yeah. Yeah. I truly think about it a lot.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks everybody for listening. What thing scares you existentially?
Yeah, right in.
And then what movie do you think is, like, creepy or shitty in the way it's creepy? Whatever. Fill it in.
Have we gotten any emails? I assume not, but...
We've got one once that I did not read.
Was this... I think, like, Joel wrote once a long time ago.
Oh, yeah. No, that's not even the one I'm thinking about. You're trying to fucking delay this thing.
I swear to God. I think it'll be very funny when there's reactions in the Discord being like, doing plugs and there's X amount of episode left.
Someone wrote in on March 18th, and it wrote in and said, just listen to Around the Long Fire. We said, if you listen to this podcast, you don't listen to GGP, drop me a line. Just let me know how you found this and why you're listening. This person listened to Bag and Book Club. And I mentioned Around the Long Fire in one of the Mortar movie nights. And they enjoy podcasts about history and fiction written in historical times. That was it. They might have found us through Totally Reprise, which is truly a great way to... find us. And then they don't care about mechs and they're like, yeah, I'm not gonna listen to a podcast about Gundam. I don't like mechs, so, you know, fair enough.
Yeah,
that's it. That's the one email we have.
Okay, well, I release you then, and then we were out of the podcast,
and then we're out of the podcast. Thank you.
Thank you.